joining us here this morning. I trust those that were away had a really good Memorial weekend. I hope you did. And good to see some folks, if not everybody, back this morning. You may remember a couple of weeks ago, I did a lesson called An Old-Fashioned Home. And basically what I talked about in that was the need for children to be able to have a stable environment in which they have mom and dad. All things being equal, I know there are some tragedies in life that are unavoidable, but for the most part, that children have a home in which they have mom and dad committed to each other and all of that kind of thing. I want to expound on that over the next couple of weeks as we round out the theme for this quarter, Building Art at Home. And I want to talk about the home environment, and I'm going to focus on moms and dads and children. And these lessons are all interconnected. They kind of run together, so they may overlap a little bit, and I may get a little bit of a head or go back and pick something up. But nonetheless, I'm going to divide it up and talk about this morning, especially the idea of a godly mother, or a mother as God meant for a mother to be in the home. Next week, and I think appropriately for next Sunday, we'll talk about godly fathers. Then we'll talk about the whole arrangement in the home, and especially as we focus on the children to round out this quarter. If you will, begin with me as we talk about this. Go back with me to Psalm 127 just for a moment. And that's where I really spent a good bit of time in the last lesson. But especially verse 3, the children are a heritage, a gift, an inheritance, or something that's entrusted to us. And that children are given to fathers and mothers, mothers and fathers. And when they fill their respective roles as God meant for them to do, being a mother or a father as, you know, respectively as they are supposed to be, when they fulfill their God-given responsibility of being parents to train them up in the way they should go, they do, in fact, as we're talking about this year, build an ark. Albeit figuratively, but they build an ark to, as the song says, save their sons and their daughters. In short, God's plan works. And anything less than God's plan, that is when we try to turn to alternative ways of raising children and, you know, setting up homes and so forth and so on, those plans fail, and they fail because we were not created to be an alternative plan. We were created to be in this institution of the home. If we build an ark, our children and others that are brought in from time to time that witness and see that example, they will be provided with examples of biblical moms and dads in the home, and in turn, they'll be able, just as Chinadu read this passage for us, to go on then teaching as they grow older, teaching younger people to step into those roles, and thus it carries on. There is to be no battle of the sexes. That's not really a phrase we hear that much, but some of you that are older, my generation and the one before, we used to hear this terminology quite a bit. Now there's been such a confusion of the sexes that the battle's lost, you know. But there used to be a battle of the sexes, but there's not supposed to be. In a godly home, there is an arrangement in which equally, and I'll stress that to you, equally, women and men, mothers and fathers, wives and husbands, have a role to play. They're on a team. And I have no problem with someone referring to, you know, a husband and wife as being a team, because that's exactly what they are. And each one should do their job. And if they do their job, then the team functions beautifully. A lot of you are sports fans. You know that I am. And for me, the thing I like more than anything is a team. I'm not much on Superman and one guy and all of that kind of thing. I'm not much on that. I like the whole team aspect, each one doing his job. And if a person is on a team and they do their job and do it well, and their teammates do their job and do it well, then the team runs smoothly. It's a beautiful thing to watch. But if people begin to confuse those roles, one person, you know, everybody's trying to be the quarterback on the team, for example, then it doesn't work. And it just falls apart. And so I don't want to belabor that point, but I think we understand that in the home, we've got to have the same environment. Now let's talk about godly mothers in an old-fashioned home for a moment. If you'll turn with me to 1 Peter chapter 3, one of the things that's emphasized about women in the New Testament, and I'm going to read this passage, is the fact that women in a home need to be godly women. If you will, they need to be a lady. It needs to be something that stands out. Children need to grow up seeing a woman being godly, spiritual, chaste, holy. In 1 Peter chapter 3, read with me from verse 1. Likewise, you wives, be in subjection to your own husbands. Now, he's just spoken of every one of us as Christians and the subjection that we are in. But now he bridges to the idea of the marriage. You wives, be in subjection to your own husbands, that if any obey not the word, they also may without the word even be one, is the idea, to Christ, by the conversation or the conduct or the manner of life of the wives. While they behold your chaste conversation, the way you live, the way you conduct yourself, it being pure, it being everything that a woman or a lady should be, they see that coupled with fear or respect. Now, there's some debate about, does he mean respect for the husband, respect for the Lord? Why not both? It's all part of the same thing. But it's an attitude of respect. Notice as he goes on, who's adorning? I can remember being young, and I can remember my mother and even my grandmother. And when they were young and they were putting forth effort to dress themselves up and look nice and all of that kind of thing. And children appreciate that. I mean, the beauty of their mother and all of that, I mean, it's something that you do appreciate. But notice as he says here, whose adorning let it not just be, is the idea, that outward adorning, you know, of plaiting the hair or braiding it or fixing it into various hairdos. Let it not just be that. And the putting on of gold or putting on of fine apparel, the idea of nice clothes and jewelry and all of that, all of that's great in its place. And I don't believe he's saying otherwise. But he's saying what it has to be, more importantly, verse 4, is the hidden man of the heart. I believe children need to see that in their mother. They need to see a chaste woman. They need to see a godly woman. They need to see a respectful woman. They need to see a woman that within her heart, and she exemplifies this in her life, in her heart is that which is not corruptible. That is the ornament of a meek and quiet spirit. And notice as he goes on, which is, in the sight of God, of great price. For after this manner in the old time, the holy women also who trusted in God, they adorned themselves, being in subjection to their own husbands. Verse 6, even as Sarah. A lot of jokes are made about verse 6, but I don't want to make jokes this morning about it. Even as Sarah obeyed Abraham. Abraham was the leader in his home, and Sarah obeyed that. And when women, and it is a great task, to take upon yourself to obey your husband, to be in subjection. I'm not saying that's always an easy thing to do. But when children see mom doing that, it is much easier to follow in the steps and do that themselves. You can make it difficult for children. You can make it almost impossible for children by always being disrespectful of your husband. And yet, as he says here, Sarah obeyed Abraham. She even called him Lord, or Sir, is the idea. And I'm not saying you have to say yes, sir, and no, sir, to your husband. It's more the attitude here. It's the idea that the children see the respect. And he says, whose daughters you are, as long as you do well, and you are not afraid with any amazement. I want to talk a little bit about that. I believe what children need to see is mom being a daughter of Sarah. What does that mean? Well, doing what's right, doing what's best for the family, respecting the husband, respecting the father, building him up before the children. And yeah, when I come back next week and talk about the husbands, believe me, I'm going to do the same thing, say virtually the same thing about the husbands. But the idea is building him up and not afraid. And this is something so important. Notice as he says at the end of verse 6, not afraid. Not afraid of being different from what the world expects. You know, in our day, if all we did all day long were to watch the talk shows or go out with other women who engage in conversation about how bad their husbands are and how bad men are and so forth and so on, what we would come away probably doing is emulating that whole life. And I take a look around me in the world today and I see how men treat women and women treat men. I mean, I'm inclined to say, how's that working for you? Because it's not. The relationships are not there as God meant for them to be, those lifelong relationships. So children need to see mom, as a daughter of Sarah, doing this kind of thing she did. And when they see that, they grow up having a definite attitude about what a man and a woman are supposed to be. Again, with Sarah, seeing her and all of that respect she had for Abraham. They need a mother who will teach them. Go back with me a few pages and read with me, you know, I guess you would say the basic passage when we talk about a home. Look, and especially with children involved. But look at Ephesians chapter 6 and start in verse 1. You know, going back and forth. But Ephesians chapter 6 and start in verse 1. When he says, children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother. Notice that. Obey them and honor them, which is the first commandment with promise, that your days may, you know, that it may be well with you and you may live long on the earth. Notice verse 4, as he goes on to say, fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord. Now that's their basic job as a mother. And when a mother takes it upon herself from the time that before the child is born, but certainly from the time the child arrives into this world, the child is being taught by the mother day in, day out, all day, every day, you need to obey your parents. You need to do what mom and dad tell you to do. Now there will come a time, there will come a day, and we will talk about that two lessons from now as we look at children. There will come a time when you will have to make the decision if what they're saying is in the Lord or not. You will grow to that point. But the idea of little kids is you do what I tell you to do. They have to be taught. They have to be trained. We all do to obey. Because all of our lives, we are going to have to obey. We are going to have to obey God. We are going to have to obey government and laws of the land. We are going to have to obey. And they need to be taught from the beginning, this is what you do. And they need to be taught respect. It's not the idea of everybody and everything in the world is bad and evil and against you and you stand up to them and stand against them. They need to be taught respect. A mother teaches that. No greater influence on a child toward obedience and respect than that interaction a mother has with that child. The child will watch what she does, do what she does, listen to what she says, because she is the mother. And that tie that begins in the womb, that inseparable tie between a mother and a child, will carry on throughout life. And she has that great opportunity. They need a mother who will teach them to obey and to honor their parents. A person who will guide. Notice as these passages, go over with me to, of course, Chenadu read the passage in Titus 2, but go over to 1 Timothy chapter 5. When Paul will say this about younger widows, remember it's in that context, but he will say in verse 14, as if to describe what a woman chooses to do, I will therefore that the younger women marry. Okay, if they're going to marry and they're young, they're probably going to have children. That they bear children. This is a good thing. It's right. So that they marry and they bear children. And then notice this phrase, that they guide the house. You know, guiding the house does not just mean mopping the floor. Okay, it is a word that means literally a manager or an attendant. That they manage, they attend, they control even. Literally in the original, it is a compound word that means a house despot. In other words, as I often say to Montel, and she knows this, for the last 21 years I've said this, about things, that's your business. You know, that's your domain, it's your area, it's your business. Now surely, we make decisions, big decisions together, but I don't need, and I don't have to stand over her for every little thing. And I don't even think that's my place. She is controlling. She is attending. She is managing. And that's her job. And it's a big one. See that things run smoothly. See that the home runs as it's supposed to run. If you manage the hotel, for example, if you manage the hotel, you might occasionally need to mop a floor. But it is far more than that. It is seeing that every room runs smoothly, that it serves the guest as it needs to be served. And you would be the one overseeing that. That's what she does. And she is to be, then, a keeper at home, as Genevieve read for us in Titus chapter 2, to love her husband and love her children. And incidentally, even though the most common word in the New Testament for love really means more than the idea, really means the idea of, this doing well for. I'm sure most everybody in here has heard the word agape. It's a Greek word, the most common one for love. And it has more to do with what you do than what you feel. You know, you can even love your enemies, for example. That's not the word in Titus 2. The word in Titus 2 for both loving her husband and loving her children is a real closeness, a deep affection that she has for her husband and her children. That's what children need. They need that kind of love, that kind of deep closeness with. And they need to see it between mom and dad. And the mother, being the emotional individual that women generally are, she can do so much to instill in her children what it means to love. I'm not convinced that a lot of people in this world even know what that means anymore. Love is thrown around with everything from animalistic behavior to you like Reese's Cups, you know? But this love here has to do with a deep, abiding affection that transcends everything, that will overcome anything. And children need that in this world today. In fact, they need women, mothers, who will be like Hannah. I'm not going to go to this story. I invite you to go to 1 Samuel chapter 1 and really read this chapter. But let's just summarize it in a nutshell. Hannah was a woman like many in the Bible. I often wonder, but I think I have some ideas why God chose to do great things after letting a woman be barren for so long. Well, that was the case with Hannah. She wanted a child. She longed for a child. And she prayed for this child. And she even said to God, God, if you will give me a child, I will give him basically to you. And I believe the idea there in the story, the example there, is just that for us. If children are a heritage of the Lord, if God is entrusting a child to us, what God is really saying to us is, I give you this child. I give you my child. And what I expect is for you to do your job in such a way that you give that child back to me. And the Bible tells us in verse 28, very famously, she lent him unto the Lord. Now we know literally that what she did was she took him at a certain age down to the temple. He served in the temple, eventually becoming high priest and judge and all of that. We know that. But what we see in Hannah is the willingness to look at the child in the proper way. This child is a gift from God, and this child ultimately belongs to God. If mothers approach their children that way, what would the world be like? You know, that's what children need. They need Sarahs. They need Hannahs. They need people like that in their lives. But let's go further. Let's talk about another, in this case, mother and grandmother. I'd like for you to turn with me to 2 Timothy chapter 1. You know, a mother is a powerful influence in the home. Some say there is no greater influence. And I wouldn't even debate that. She's a powerful influence. She shapes the lives of her children. You know, the things she does, the way she interacts with them and talks with them, what God has given a woman in her makeup to deal with her children can be an amazing thing. Just an incredible thing. And it's there. I believe that it is natural that God put it in every woman to be that. Now, you can reject it and rebel against it. and you can not be what you're supposed to be, and you can blame it on every kind of excuse in the world. You know, where you came from, what you were not taught, etc., etc., etc. But I believe it's there. And that what God is saying is you can be this for your child regardless of the circumstances. Now, I'll mention this because I don't know that it has great bearing on the story. And God did not see fit to tell us this. But you know one thing God does tell us about Timothy? It tells us that his mother and his grandmother were Jewesses. They were Jews. And they were obviously very faithful Jews from the verses we're about to read. And all it says of his father is, but his father was a Greek. And it really doesn't tell us if he had died when Timothy was, 2 years old. Or if he was an unfaithful individual, sort of a Greek-speaking Jew. Even if he was a Gentile, I doubt it. But even if he was, it doesn't tell us much about his father. But boy, does it tell us about his mother and his grandmother. If you read this in 2 Timothy 1, beginning here in verse 3, Paul says, I thank God whom I serve from my forefathers with pure conscience, etc. I pray night and day, verse 4, greatly desiring to see you, Timothy, is the idea. Remember, he's writing this when he's close to his death. Timothy has become a son to Paul. And I really want to see you. But he goes on in verse 5, he says, why I want to see you so badly and what's so special about you, Timothy? Well, verse 5, when I call to remembrance the unfeigned, which means unhypocritical is the idea. The unhypocritical faith that is in you. Now, where'd that come from? Well, Paul taught him a lot, obviously. But Paul doesn't take credit here. Notice what Paul says. I look at you and I see a person like no other, one that has a faith without hypocrisy. And I see in you a person with a faith that first dwelt in your grandmother Lois and your mother Eunice. And I'm persuaded it's in you also. Let's flip a page over to chapter 3 and look at verse 14. When Paul goes on to talk about the faith of Timothy, if I can get my Bible open here. When Paul goes on to talk about the faith of Timothy, notice if you'll go to 2 Timothy chapter 3 and down in verse 14. Paul said, I want you to continue. Now again, he's leading into a section where he's going to talk about, I'm going to die. And you're going to have to carry on here. But what I want you to continue in, verse 14. I want you to continue in the things which you've learned and you've been assured of. I want you to focus on that word for a second. Knowing of whom you've learned them. Now I want you to think as you read that verse about what he's just said about Lois and Eunice. I want you to think about the fact that when a child is small, a child is born and they have to rely on their mother for everything. They die without mom. And they learn to trust from the... In fact, in the womb, I think, is where they start learning to trust. But they learn to depend and trust in their mother for their food, for their, for taking care of them, etc. And if that mother is doing what she's supposed to be doing, that bond only grows stronger and stronger and stronger as that child grows. Now, if, together with the food and the clothing and the diaper changing and all of that, she also instills her faith in that child. She tells that child about Jesus before he would even have a clue who Jesus is. She teaches him about what it means to have faith in God. What it means to obey God. Like you obey mom and dad. Well, there's a higher being. She teaches him all those things. She assures that child that this is the important thing of your life. And the child grows up understanding that. I want you, Timothy, to continue in the things you learned and you were assured of. And that from verse 15, from a child. Literally in the original language, this is a word that means the little child, the baby. You have known the Holy Scripture. A child should grow up, if a mother is doing what a mother should do, a child should grow up never being able to remember a time when Jesus wasn't spoken in our house. In other words, when they're grown, they should say, you know, I don't know a time in my, I can't remember a time in my life when I didn't go to church. I can't remember a time in my life when mom didn't sit down with me in the Bible. I knew those things before I could talk. Mom was there assuring me of who the Lord is. That from a little child you have known the Holy Scriptures, which are able to make you wise unto salvation. If a mother does that, what a powerful influence she is. They say the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world. You'll find most everybody in the world agrees with that. No greater influence. And it ought to be that way. I mean, above the influence certainly of your peers. You know, we all have friends. We run with people, etc., etc. That's a natural part of life. But far greater than that influence should have been built in the child. The influence of the mother. The one that was there from the beginning. The one that was always teaching and helping and training and all of that. More than your teachers. More than political leaders. Mom. And it carries on into adulthood. Titus 2. The older women teach the younger women. You know, you'll reach that. You'll grow from an infant. It'll pass by so quickly you can't believe it. You'll stand like I do with wrinkles and gray hair. And you know, then it'll be your time as an old person. You'll teach the younger, and you'll pass on all of that wisdom, and you'll often think about the things that are coming out of your mouth, and you'll smile even. Yeah, boy, did I hear Mom say that 100,000 times? Yeah. You pass it on. Timothy's faith was instilled in him by his mother and his grandmother. They gave Timothy a legacy that could be remembered and appreciated. And if you are fortunate like I am to remember back to being a little kid on a quiet summer afternoon, maybe, crawling up on the couch when it took some effort to get up on the couch, and have them sitting there reading a story, being fascinated by a story out of the Bible, learning for the first time who Noah was, or David with his sling, or who Jesus was. As he confounded the elders, you know, in the temple. And all of those things. If you were fortunate enough to have that, you really have a legacy. And that's what children need. It's the idea of the memories. What memories will my children have for me? And mothers that are in the audience, or those who are going to be mothers, your children will be grown someday. What memories will they carry? Will they carry memories of your faith and how you practiced it? In every circumstance, what you did with it. Will they be able to carry that throughout life and even into old age? Build an ark at home. You know, in Proverbs 31, and I'm going to run through this quickly because you can go home and read this for yourself in Proverbs 31. But in Proverbs 31, King Lemuel asked the question, who can find a virtuous or a worthy woman? A woman that is really worth something is the idea. Because her price is far above rubies. And he speaks of things like verse 11 when he says she's trustworthy. Or verse 12, she makes good decisions, you know, between good and evil. And she makes the right decision. Or he goes on to say in verses 13 through 19, again in 24, again in 27, she's industrious. He talks about all the things she does, you know, kind of like we would say today, on the side. She seems forever to be getting involved in some business and some, you know, money-making opportunity. And a lot of times people today, you know, will look at all of that and say, is that right? Well, she's being praised for it. She's industrious, yes. She even works outside the home. And I think you can see that in Proverbs 31. That it's all right to do that. But she always prioritizes her home. Her husband knows that. Her children know that. Mom puts our home first. Our home is what it is because Mom makes it so. And they always know that. She's charitable, verse 20. It talks about giving to the poor, the needy. But it also talks about the fact, you may see that phrase in there, in verse 21, about the children and the clothing of scarlet. And there's been a lot of debate about that. But this is what I believe that it says. She prepares her children for the difficult times. Some have made the point about, you know, the bright clothing on children because, you know, in certain weather conditions and so forth, it would stand out should they be separated. That may be so. It may be what it's talking about there. But I think certainly what it is getting at is, mom is like that mother hen. And she is going to make sure she gathers her chicks in. You know, she's going to take care of her family is the idea. Even when times are rough. She's not throwing up her hands. And this is not what a mother does, a godly mother does. She doesn't throw up her hands and say, it's too hard. You know, do for me. I don't have time for you. No, she's always putting them first. The Bible goes on to say there in verse 22, she adorns herself. Again, Peter was not saying, don't fix your hair, don't put on, you know, nice clothes. No, she adorns herself, but she also adorns her home. We would say today, in a good way, she takes pride in it. She fixes herself and she fixes her home in such a way that when people come into the home or people see her, they see someone that cares enough to take some time with it. And so that's the idea there. She is the cause, then, for her husband's and her children's respect. Remember, it talks about the husband being praised in the gate, for example. That's where the rulers of the city would gather. Her husband is respected, mainly because of his wife there. And the children, when they see the children, they see the reflection of the mother. She conducts herself properly, or I'll go back and say, as a lady. She knows what is really important, and she excels in that. I would say if you laid that out as a goal for what I want to, you know, you are a woman and you're saying, okay, what do I need to be and what do I want to be in my home? If that was your goal, if that was your to-do list, man, what a home you would have. And you would also have the deep love and respect of your husband and children. As we go further and I wrap this up, this is kind of cute, so I thought I'd throw this out here. There were some questions that were posed to some elementary school girls. I picked this up off the website, but I think it's interesting. And so this teacher asked these questions. One of them was, what are mothers made of? The answer I like best, I chose of little Debbie at age 5. She said, God makes mothers out of clouds and angel hair and everything nice in the world. And one dab of mean. That's priceless. I love little Debbie, boy. Ask the class, what kind of little girl do you think your mom was? Well, I particularly like Sarah's answer. I don't know because I wasn't there. But my guess would be pretty bossy. You know, exactly right. Pretty bossy, teaching those children how to obey. And finally, this question. Why do you love your mom? I chose two answers here because I thought they both were equally beautiful. Why do you love your mom? Brianna said she lets me share the chocolates in her lamp table drawer. She reads to me, and we sit on the porch swing together. And Sarah again said, she lets me read my book under the covers with a flashlight. And she gives me lots of chances to pick up my toys. You know, if you look at these answers, you know what you see here? You see that daily interaction between a mother and a child. The mother that's forming that relationship that's just inseparable with her child. The mother that's being patient, you know, not every move the child makes is wrong. Every time the child doesn't do something they're supposed to do, they're the worst being that ever walked the earth. You're not seeing that. The time that is taken. It's far more important to take time to sit on a swing and read together with the child than it is to catch the latest episode of every soap opera. It's the idea of the closeness between the mother and the child. Timothy, I know what you are. And boy, do I know where it came from. Because I know your mom. And I know your grandma. If you're here this morning and you're not a child of God, this is the practical part of being a child of God if you're a woman. Being a godly wife and a godly mother. It's the practical part of doing greatest thing you can ever do on earth. And that's to help a little one grow up and be what they're supposed to be. If you're here today and you believe in the Lord, you believe Jesus is the Son of God, and you'll confess that. And you're willing to repent. You're willing to change your life and live your life for Him. And if today you'll be baptized for forgiveness of your sins, you'll wash all your sins away, you stand completely new, reborn, in the sight of God. You might be here and you might have done that, and you might look at your life and say, boy, you know, I just haven't quite begun to do all I need to do. I need to recommit myself and change some things. And we'd be glad to pray together with you. Won't you please come while I'm here?